Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Round Table, coming to you from Beijing. I'm He Yang. Good to have you join us. On today's show, we delve into the vibrant world of Chinese storytelling through animation. Some of the most beloved characters, such as Boonie Bears and Pleasant Goat and Big Big Wolf, have been the companions of Chinese kids for generations, etching indelible memories. Chinese animation has become a cultural and economic powerhouse for the past decade, but what challenges lie ahead? And we share with you what's brought us joy this week, what's made us happy, in Roundtable's Happy Place. For today's program, I'm joined by Xingyu in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line, first on today's show. The Boonie Bears franchise has become the most popular animation in China, amassing an impressive $1 billion at the box office. Other Chinese animations, such as Wesley and Wolfie and Pleasant Goat and Big Big Wolf, have been cherished by generations of Chinese kids. And now they're evolving, reaching out to reach the souls of adults with narratives that explore the depths of life, the pursuit of dreams, and the passage of time, love, and the poignancy of loss. Can these animations prove to be more than just kids' tales, but a reflection of life itself, and ultimately reach all age groups and become one of the more profitable movie genres? So, tell us what's new right now, and certainly in recent years we've seen that animations coming from China have achieved great success in the box office.
Yes. So China's animation industry is booming, especially over the past several years. The country has seen an incredible development, not just in the number of anime productions, but also the box office revenues they generated. One of the most recent examples is the Boonie Bears Time Twist, which is an animated feature film from the Boonie Bears franchise that He Yang just mentioned. And some say the Boonie Bears has been the biggest animation brand in China for many years. So the movie was released in February, and it made a splash in terms of box office in China, grossing $270 million in revenue, and it's one of the highest grossing animated films in the Chinese market. So I'll just give a little bit of background about this franchise. It's originally a Chinese animated cartoon series and was first shown in January 2012. So that's like 12 years ago, and it became the most popular children's show in China. And the series features two bears, Xiong Da and Xiong Er, and also they are trying to stop this logger called Vic, in Chinese Guang Tou Qiang, from destroying their forest home. I think this might trigger some of the memories of Chinese kids. And also, apart from the Boonie Bears, which is very popular, there is also another one called Pleasant Goat and Big Big Wolf, in Chinese Xi Yang Yang Yu Hui Tai Lang. I think I just passed the stage of watching this cartoon series while I was in my teens, because this was premiered in 2005. So I think for the generation who were born in the 1980s and 1990s, they might not have the chance to watch this cartoon series while growing up, but it's quite successful. And recently it launched its new cartoon series this year called Explore Wolfie's Mind, and it achieved the highest viewership ratings in the country in the animation category for the group aged under 14. So I think these two examples, both franchises started with cartoon series, but then they move on to produce animated feature films targeting not just children, but wider age groups by improving both the quality of the screen performances and also contents.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I haven't actually seen the Boonie Bears so much, and I hadn't until before this show. I looked them up a bit and I saw a few clips, and it does make sense to me though why it's been so successful. I think that you can really see the quality of the animation. I was quite surprised actually. It was pretty high quality, and a lot of the themes seem to be quite complex, and I mean complex enough to attract a wider audience. So I think this is something that a lot of animations are trying to do these days. I guess the Boonie Bears has been quite successful. And when I Googled it to look at it, a lot of the questions, the most researched questions about the Boonie Bears were basically, where is it from? It seems like a lot of people didn't even know that it was from China. Mm. So I think that's quite interesting as well, which sort of says that a lot of these themes are quite universal, right? And
yeah.
that although there are, if you know about it, there are some quite traditional Chinese elements in it, there's still quite an international theme going on, or some universally approachable storylines.
Oh, that's really interesting you brought that up, because for many members of the millennial generation, or maybe partially Gen Z, we have grown up watching Japanese anime and enjoying Japanese manga and
right.
also Disney movies, you know, and it took some time to see how the homegrown animation industry can grow and has ballooned into such a size and delivering top-notch presentation and also storytelling. But I like to leave a question mark there, because I think a lot of people feel that there still is ample room for improvement to tell a better story. And also, I think this rings true in movies, animation, or whatnot, that essentially you need a really good story and you need character development in depth to really engross, let's say, adults to want or to appreciate it. And that's something we can talk about. But what I find really interesting right now is apparently this is a business model. Of course, it's not easy to establish IP or that beloved intellectual property. But once you do, and apparently it seems like for the world of animation, it's through these, you know, many, many episodes of cartoons that you watch on TV, which is essentially free for most people, right? You just pay for cable, or these days, maybe not even cable, you stream it online or whatnot. And then you have this, it's almost like you've trained a huge group of audience, and mainly their kids. And then once you've got this sort of influence, and then you make movies for the cinema, and you get the kids into the cinema. Of course, their parents will go with them, because kids can't go by themselves. And if that movie is successful, you make another one, and that becomes the business model. And now we're seeing that these very popular IPs, or intellectual property franchises, have been exploring pretty dark themes, which I don't necessarily think is all that new internationally with some of the really classic animation movies out there. But in China, maybe this is still something that is worth people's attention, because apparently there's, you know, okay, I can't really put a finger on what exactly this is, but about like loss of loved ones, about, you know, some of this might even be like mental health issues or whatnot. So, Xinyu, tell us, what do you think about this latest venture into maybe some of the more darker or deep themes that these animations that we did not expect, but now they're trying to explore?
I think one of the main reasons is that these animation producers, they're shifting their target audience from just children to, you know, adults, adult audiences. So if you're just exploring what the kids would like to watch, then these contents might not cater to the expectations of the adult audiences. I think that's one of the main considerations behind this. And also, as the animation industry in China develops, we are seeing that this animation market is quite profitable. So I think starting with the cartoon series that I mentioned, like Pleasant Goat and Big Big Wolf, and also Boonie Bears, they have launched animated feature films, which resulted in quite impressive box office revenues. So I think that's how that encouraged many animation producers in China, that they're seeing we have ushered in the profitable era of the Chinese animated films.
I think you make a really good point that for it to become internationally successful, for Josh to want to Google this, of course he's doing it because he's preparing for the show, but for the other international people who have been researching on this topic, it seems like I think this is a really delicate balance, because what the international audience would really enjoy, you could argue, isn't all that traditionally Chinese, so to speak, like for booty bears or the wolf, the
goat,
the goats and stuff. And it doesn't necessarily have such a obvious culture mark on it, but it's something that any kid would enjoy, would feel is accessible regardless from your cultural or language background. And I think that is what is truly the international currency of entertainment and enjoyment. And I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. But I also want to add a bit of probably different opinion on this.
Please do.
Because if we look at the box office revenues, if we look at the top 10 highest grossing animated feature films in the Chinese market, we can see that many of these successful animated films, they are centered around Chinese mythology or these established Chinese legends or classic tales. So I think for most of the Chinese audiences, the familiarity of these old tales have shortened the distance between probably the viewing and also the movie itself. So to a certain extent, these animation producers, they target Chinese audiences through the production of or the adaptation of these Chinese mythologies. But for the international audience, this can also pose a challenge for a wider audience to accept and also to understand the contents.
Yes, and I think that is very spot on what you just pointed out. Because if you look at the domestic Chinese market, of course, I think this is going to come as a surprise for some people as well. And we can go into more depth of the top 10 animated movies that achieved great success or top success in the Chinese market. Six of them are originally Chinese productions. But if you go international, I think it's a different question to explore. That is, what is accessible for the global taste? And yeah, so it's interesting that maybe there is a difference in taste when it comes to what you want to see in animation for the home audience versus the international audience. But I guess maybe the really successful ones, they manage to cater to both.
Yeah, I think so. And I also think that it depends on the genre of the animation. We're talking about animation here, but actually there's very different types of animation, right? There are animations that are more fantasy based. And I think that those kind of animations, actually, if they are from a completely different culture, like a lot of the Japanese anime that has seen massive success all over the world, and some of those animations are very Japanese, right? But still they've managed to find success because a lot of them, their main genre isn't actually humor. It's fantasy, right? And so the viewer is already sort of welcoming that new world for them. It doesn't really matter if it's not based in their culture. But I do think that some of these animations that are more domestically successful or are more sort of successful in particular cultures, for me, they tend to be ones that are more comedy based. Some of the examples that I can think of, I'm not sure if you know this one, but one of the most famous, if not the most famous animation from my own country is Wallace and Gromit. I'm not sure if you've heard of that or He Yang, I'm sure you might have heard of it, right? Yeah.
But not so
famous in other countries.
Yeah, it's a really particular British sense of humor. And
exactly.
Yeah, it is very dry. And you mentioned that and I just can't stop laughing. And also, aesthetically, it's not pleasing to the eye, who is, you know, very much used to conventionally beautiful characters. I hope that's not an offense, Josh.
No, but that's the British humor because it's we love self-deprecating humor, right? That's very British, right? And so Wallace and Gromit, they don't look very good looking, nor does anybody in the whole series, right?
That's
they all
so
look like a British stereotype, right? Bucked teeth and they're constantly eating cheese and drinking tea and talking funny. And
Josh, I have a quick question for you.
Translate.
Here. Like, do British animation makers not worry that they're portraying British people in an ugly fashion? Is that not of concern?
No, because again, that's what we like. We like to be, we like this self-deprecating humor for some reason, you know?
Yeah.
So we love it. We love to take the Mickey out of ourselves. Yeah.
Yes, that's something that I really appreciate from the British culture. I'm glad you brought that up. See, this is one thing that I feel that some of people who work in the entertainment industry or they're producing essentially cultural products and they're hoping to aim at an international market. And then what a lot of these Chinese practitioners in the industry, I think they worry way too much about how you're being perceived. It's almost like you have to make it pleasing. You have to make it like, oh, you assume that everybody will really like it and in a really straightforward manner. Otherwise, you think it's too risky and you don't want to push the envelope and you're going for the safe option, which is often boring and simply do not resonate with an international audience. And to give you another example, not completely related to this, but Josh, what you said really just sent my mind flying. Sadly, a few weeks ago, Niao Shanming, I'm sorry, I don't know the Japanese to this master's name, he passed away, and he's the author of Dragon Ball.
Oh.
And he's been revered by fans all over the world, from America to France to China to Japan, you know, the home country of this author. And Dragon Ball, when you look at the characters, I'm not sure if they're from China, but there are a lot of Chinese elements,
yes,
in it. And then Niao Shanming got a lot of his inspirations from watching Jackie Chan or Cheng Long's movies. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the main character's name is Wukong, you know, for crying out loud. And then, you know, they come to like China and go to a little town, and there's like, there are so many Chinese elements to it. But has it stopped the Japanese animation maker or manga master from presenting it not as Japanese? No. And then I think essentially it's like some of the things that truly make humanity vibe with each other. And that is truly international. That is timeless. And later on, you'll realize, oh, this is from a Japanese origin. And then it's just fascinating how these animations have developed. So, what do you think explains the fast development and also wider acceptance of these animation movies in China?
So if we look at China's development of animation industry, actually the first long animation film can be traced back to the 1940s when The Princess Iron Fan, in Chinese, I think it's 铁扇公主, was released by the Wan brothers, who are inspired from flip books and traditional Chinese shadow puppetry. And later, we have seen Shanghai Animation Film Studio was founded, and it released several quite successful animation productions, including The Monkey King Uproar in Heaven, which was released in 1960s, and it received numerous awards and recognition. And I think then in the 21st century, with the development of many new media technologies, and also we're seeing more anime talents joining in this industry. So Chinese anime industry is making great strides in this new era, especially between the year of 2007 and 2016. This period laid a solid foundation for the thriving Chinese animation industry we see nowadays, including like what I just mentioned, The Pleasant Goat and Big Big Wolf. I've been constantly mentioning this. And also Boonie Bears. They both launched animated feature films that made a big influence on the market. And also in 2015, we saw The Monkey King Hero is Back, another successful animated feature film in 3D that tells the story of the Chinese hero Monkey King, which became the top 10 highest grossing animated feature film in China. So I think some of these released animated feature films, they started a new cultural phenomenon, and also it evoked public enthusiasm for homegrown cartoon films, and also encouraged more and more Chinese animators to produce good works to cater for the audiences of all ages. And also meanwhile, during this period, we have also seen some of the foreign animated features that impressed Chinese audiences in this period, like Frozen in 2013 and also Zootopia in 2016. So I think most of these films, they combined the latest digital technology with the filming art to present stunning visual effects. But the success of these foreign productions also inspired Chinese animators to improve their storytelling and also technologies.
So is this area truly a testament or this stellar example that, you know, industry practitioners, they learn from each other in different countries, and also you learn from the best, and then you play catch up, maybe. But surprisingly, just in a few years' time, you've just gone, you've achieved progress by leaps and bounds. And it surprised, I think, a lot of the Chinese home audiences too, that, oh, wow, this is available, and Chinese animators could achieve so much in these movies and animation series. And then it becomes sort of like a positive cycle to be into. And then, you know, when you realize, oh, there are some good things to expect, and then next time when you see there's another Chinese animation film being shown in cinema, and then, yeah, you get the ticket and go see it. And hopefully that's what sets the positive cycle for today's animation industry. Yes, despite the fact that we've seen an overall boom in interest and also box office performance of these Chinese animated films, but also there are some of the problems or the difficulties the industry is going through. And Josh, could you just name a couple for us?
Yeah, first of all, you know, although the industry is getting bigger, one thing that comes with that, of course, is competition, I think. And so I think that the market becoming increasingly crowded can be a good thing because it pushes the level up, right, this competition. And also it means that the whole the industry as a whole becomes more diverse, the audience grows, etc. But at the same time, I think that this market saturation can sometimes make it difficult for small or newer studios to stand out. And animation actually, for a long time, has been quite an approachable cinematic art form, in the sense that, you know, you can actually do a lot with a small team of people originally, right? You can have your illustrators, you can have people that write the story, you don't need to pay actors as much, only voice actors, etc., right? It's sort of doable, slightly more doable to some respects, right? It's sort of an in-between between like a radio drama and something visual. But now it's completely different, right? We know that the amount of technology is much more expensive. So high production costs and competition.
Yes, alongside that, we could still do with more talents, but it's also promising to see more and more young people, one generation after another, throwing themselves into this industry. And we've seen the positive results that come from that. And in the future, it seems like, you know, with more people going to see these movies, it's going to fuel and attract more talent into the business, as well as attract capital and investment. But hopefully, still, at the end of the day, who doesn't like a good story? And we could always beef up our efforts in that.